Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 25th of August, Anno Domini 2012, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Today's safe word is banana. I don't even know what that's about. but I want to say you guys did a great job last week.
I couldn't hear
Rick at all, but that was maybe me. I could hear him. I could hear Steve great. I could sort of hear Dave.
No. Like I was explaining before, because of that power outage the week before, the board, there were some issues with the board, and we were kind of playing with levels. Like right now, Nick and Steve and I are fine. You, on the other hand...
Hey, get over yourself.
I got to keep a tight rein on because just your normal speaking.
Yeah.
Right now, until they get the other processor in, which is going to be about a month, I've got to kind of watch it because it does go up and down, and it fluctuates within that.
I'm a loud guy. Get over yourself.
Who controls the board.
That's exactly right. back in the day when I was taking theater classes, we were told there's that half-deaf old lady in the back of the auditorium, in our 1,153-seat auditorium, and you want to be heard by her, and I can be.
What about the poor guy in the front that has perfect hearing?
He should sit farther back. That's how that works. All right, we actually have two number one stories today, because when I did the news early in the evening, we had one number one story, and then later on in the evening, a second more important one came along. But
wait a minute, define your early.
About 7:30, 8 o'clock, actually early for me. Normally, I don't even do it until 10:30, 11 o'clock.
And then the other earlier one?
That was 11:30. See, okay. I should have waited. Had I waited, that'd have been okay. All right, but you can give us a call, of course, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415, but we are going to go through both of these stories first. The poll story is unlimited cellular data is back. After sliding off the menu of cell phone plans, data plans with no caps are making a comeback at smaller wireless companies trying to compete with AT&T and Verizon. T-Mobile USA, the nation's fourth largest cell phone company, said Wednesday that it will start selling an unlimited data plan again on September 5th after stopping sales of such plans early last year. A day earlier, number five carrier Metro PCS cut the price of its unlimited data plan as a promotion for a limited time. The moves by T-Mobile USA and Metro PCS, neither of which sells the iPhone, come as their three largest rivals are thought to be gearing up to begin selling the iPhone 5 in a month or so. Number three carrier Sprint Nextel Corporation already has an unlimited data plan and credits that with helping it attract customers for its smartphones. AT&T, the nation's second-largest carrier, stopped signing up customers for unlimited data plans 2 years ago, while number one Verizon Wireless stopped last year. Both have shifted toward lifting all limits on calls and texting, but limiting data usage. From a network perspective, of course, that makes sense, as calls and text use very little network capacity, while video downloads and other data use can clog the network and slow the service for everyone. Limited data plans pose problems for customers, however. It's easy to figure out how many minutes of calling you need in a month, and it's a lot easier to do that than figure out how many gigabytes you'll use. T-Mobile is launching the plan because it's what customers want, said Kevin McLaughlin, vice president of marketing at the company. So the company is confident it can help its network keep its network fast and dependable, even with unlimited data users. T-Mobile's unlimited plan will cost $30 a month. $30 a month.
Whoa.
For unlimited everything. And when adding, added to a regular calling and texting, $30 a month for data when added to a regular calling and texting plan, and $20 when added to a cheaper value plan, which is where you bring your own phone.
And we're hearing a lot of people that T-Mobile is the refuge for jailbroken iPhones that are out of contract.
Right.
Because they have always had better rates than AT&T did.
Right. And, of course, up until now, both AT&T and T-Mobile, their unlimited data plans means after you hit a certain level of usage, it slows you down.
But doesn't stop you.
But doesn't stop you. Under T-Mobile's new unlimited plan, all data would be at maximum speed all the time. No slowdowns.
Yep.
So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, T-Mobile is going back to truly unlimited data on 5th of September. And your choices are, yes, I'm going to switch. Yes, I'm already on T-Mobile. Having an iPhone is more important than using it freely. I can't be bothered to think about switching. And, Mabel, has that call to Henry gone through yet? Referencing last week's poll.
When I glanced at the poll this week, it had already been filled out, and I saw the Mabel, Henry. Oh, wait, the last week's poll is still up. Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah, right.
Refresh.
And, of course, when you're done with the poll, we know you'll have more to say. So check the yellow box underneath the poll and click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And the questionnaire is the same. T-Mobile is going back to truly unlimited data on the 5th of September. So are you a T-Mobile customer? What do you think of their coverage? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-529. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And those are the same numbers you call to tell us about the other number one story of the week. A jury of seven men and two women read the Apple versus Samsung verdict to a packed courtroom late last night, and it was all bad news for Samsung. The Korean electronics giant has been found to infringe all of Apple's utility patents and all but one of the four design patents asserted, and was ordered to pay $1.05 billion in damages to Apple. That's billion with a B. Now, of course, that's less than the $2.75 billion Apple asked for, but it's still a huge sum. If it holds up on appeal, it'll stand as the largest patent verdict of all time. More importantly, it gives Apple a huge leg up in the corporate patent wars and immeasurably strengthens the company's negotiating position with regard to the Android phones it is struggling against. Since Samsung's patent infringement was found to be willful in many cases, the $1.05 billion damages figure could go up. Patent law allows for up to triple damages in cases where infringement is found to be willful, although judges rarely grant that much in additional damages. Samsung has been the number one seller of smartphones in the U.S. for the past few years, and this verdict will surely alter the balance of power. Apple's ultimate target is Google, of course, which created the Android operating system that runs on Samsung smartphones. Steve Jobs thought Android was a ripoff of Apple products and vowed to declare a thermonuclear war on the competing OS, according to his biography. Now the world will get a chance to see just what the results of Jobs' promised nuclear attack will be. There is a danger that Samsung products could be kicked off the market following this verdict. However, that decision will have to be made in the coming weeks by U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh, who oversaw the case. Koh has scheduled a hearing on that issue for September 20th, and it'll probably be decided at 11:30 at night on a Friday, so I'll have two number one stories that week, too. During closing arguments, Apple portrayed Samsung as an enthusiastic copycat that took a shortcut to profits, engaging in a three-month copying agreement spree that piggybacked on the years of hard work Apple witnesses said it took to create the iPhone. Samsung, meanwhile, denied those copying allegations and accused Apple of being a courtroom bully that refused to compete in the marketplace. Apple's three utility patents, all found infringed, cover features like double tapping to zoom and the bounce back technology that snaps images back into place. The company's four design patents cover elements like the contours and shape of the iPhone. The jury also rejected Samsung's arguments that the patents were invalid. Samsung escaped an infringement finding on only one of Apple's patents, a design patent asserted only against two Samsung tablets. Samsung's counterattack against Apple using six of its own patents went nowhere. The jury found that Samsung's patents weren't infringed, and Samsung won't get any of the $422 million it was asking for. The jury of seven men and two women returned the verdict much faster than expected. After just 2.5 days of deliberation in the San Jose Federal Courthouse, we really thought this was going to go on for another week.
Yeah, as long as the trial was, the verdict was quick. And there was a verdict form that hit the web. 700 questions the jury had to answer to themselves.
And they did it in 2.5 hours.
Days.
Days. They had to fill in that form. Closing arguments had taken place late Tuesday. The case, which began with opening arguments on July 31st, had been an unusually tense one with U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh often sniping at lawyers on both sides. The verdict was originally reported as $1.051 billion, but there were inconsistencies in the jury form. The jury spent about an hour working those out. That lowered the final damages amount by $2.4 million. For a reported total of $1,049,343,540. And if you'd like to talk to us about that, it's the same number, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
So that, and that billion-dollar settlement is basically one half of one quarter's profit of Samsung. So it's an insignificant amount of money to the company.
Well, not insignificant, but small.
Small, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where this goes in the future. Most of the patent stuff was actually about design patents. So that won't affect any other phone manufacturer unless they also have copied, they're found to have copied Apple's designs. But the three utility patents, double tapping to zoom, and the bounce back technology that snaps images back into place, if anybody else is using those, they better pretty much stop.
I want to see the jury impaneling. I got to bet that both sides were saying, do you own an iPhone? You're out. Do you own a Samsung phone? You're out.
Yep.
So did they find nine people that didn't use either Apple or Samsung?
The problem is you only have a certain number of your outs.
Yeah.
So once you've used them up, you get who you get.
The judge can dismiss also.
Right, the judge can dismiss. Yeah. Right, if both attorneys have, like, it's a murder trial.
Yeah,
they get so many rejections.
Have used their rejections, and then somebody gets up and says, "Yeah, I think everybody on earth is guilty." Yep. I can
spot a guilty person just like that.
Just like that, I use mental telepathy to do it. The judge then can say, "Thank you for your service. Step down."
Well, I got excused from one because I had two daughters, and based upon the case, they sat there and asked, "Do you have any kids?" And I go, "Yes, I got two young daughters." And the defense lawyer says, "You're excused, sir."
Yeah, I got excused from one because it was a technology case.
Uh huh.
Yeah. And
you'd be the expert witness.
Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly what the judge said. The judge looked at me, and this was a case where both lawyers had used all their denials, or their whatever they're called. I'm not a lawyer. Brenna could call in and tell us.
Yeah.
But the judge said to me, you know, one of these people could have called you as an expert witness, but I think you probably shouldn't be on the jury. You're excused. Thank you.
I've read that the jury can ask questions, but it's really frowned upon.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's an amazing experience. I've served on a couple of juries. I've served on a grand jury.
I've been called for a couple of grand juries, made it as far as the courtroom before getting excused because we got enough people already, but I've never actually served on a jury.
A grand jury is actually a very interestingly different process.
That's a lot longer, too, right?
It's a month. You serve for an entire month.
Oh, wow.
And basically, your entire job is to determine whether or not the prosecutor has enough evidence to take the case to trial. You don't care who's guilty, who's not guilty.
Okay, just whether they can go forward with it.
Is this bogus, or is it real? And
is there
can go to
probable
trial?
Cause?
But the subtle context is, if the prosecution has enough evidence to go to trial, it's probably guilty.
Well, yes. But that's
but then the defense can put their defense in. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Also, on that grand jury, no, you said a month. Was that every day?
Every single day for a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because I've done jury duty. I've been called four times, and I've served on three trials.
Yeah.
Because the other one, once we got in there, we were picked for the jury. They said, all right, go to lunch. We came back. And they said, all right, they decided to settle out of court. Thank you for your service. So I wound up spending.
And that counts.
Yeah. Yep. I wound up spending just the morning and you know, lunchtime. And I went back to work.
Yep.
And I was done for, what is it, 5 years?
Yeah.
And you get $50 a day for serving on a jury if your employer doesn't pay your salary anyway.
Yeah, well, my employer paid my salary, so I got nothing extra. And that's fine. Yeah. You know, I used to work at a bank back in the day, and they were very good about that.
That's where all the money is. That's where all the money. Did you ever go in the vault and roll around just because you could?
You know, I asked people if they did that. Do you ever just go in and look at the money? And they looked at me and said, "We don't keep money here.
Yeah,
nobody keeps money anymore."
Yeah.
There's. If you want to look at money, you go to the cashier drawers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we do have a little money in the back room, but not really enough to roll around in.
No, all
it's not Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
Back there, it's just not done that way anymore. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. And amidst all this craziness, you are indeed listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And don't forget, banana. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And what's the next one you guys wanted me to read?
Oh, my prediction. Somebody else is agreeing with me.
The Windows
8.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, read that
Microsoft
one.
Microsoft should brace for a user backlash against Windows 8 that will make the company pine for the days of Clippy, according to usability expert Raluca Boudiou of the... Boudiou?
Yeah, Boudi.
Raluca?
Boudi, Boudi, yeah.
Some sort of usability expert of the Nielsen Norman Group. During an interview with Laptop Magazine, Boudiou said that the billion... plus users around the world who have become accustomed to Windows, eventually, will experience massive difficulties adjusting to the new Windows 8 user interface, going so far as to call the new UI a cognitive burden. Boudia's criticisms of Windows 8 are ones that have been often cited in the past. That Microsoft produced an interface that works very well for smartphones and tablets, but that performs poorly as a desktop OS. Windows 8 is optimized for content consumption rather than content production and multitasking, she said. And by the way, that's what I've been saying about iOS forever.
Mm-hmm.
Same idea. And Apple is now doing the same thing with their new stuff. Whereas content consumption can easily be done on other media, production and multitasking are still best suited for PCs. Windows 8 appears to ignore that. Boudiou thinks that the biggest pain will come when users switch between the standard desktop modes on the OS and the user interface formerly known as Metro, which is designed for touchscreen use more so than for operation with a keyboard and mouse. Users will need to remember two different interfaces, she explained. They will learn Windows 8, but won't be able to forget Windows 7, and they will need to keep track of which app goes with each framework. It's definitely a cognitive burden, but not an insurmountable one. So, are you looking forward to the cognitive burden of Windows 8? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0465. Dave? You've been saying it for a while, and it is absolutely true.
It's also the every other alternate version. Windows 7 is pretty well accepted, so Windows 8, by default, won't be.
That's exactly right.
Like I told people a month and a half ago, hear me now, remember me later. And the big issue is going to be that interface.
Yep.
They don't give you the option to switch between the two and slowly learn it. That's going to drive a lot of fun. If they gave me, and here's my example. Currently with Windows 7 and XP and the rest, you were able to go between, say, menus, classic menus, standard
right.
menus. They'd need to do that with the OS. Tablet mode versus, or the Metro mode versus the new.
Right. The problem is in Metro mode, if you run Word, it still comes up with the old interface.
Right.
So you still have to remember.
You'll be switching back and forth between those two interfaces,
right?
And that's going to be even crazier,
right? And it's an interesting problem, and it's the same one that Apple is going to have if they incorporate more of iOS into Mountain Lion the Third.
Well, fortunately for now, it's optional. But that's the worry from a lot of Mac developers is that, OS 11, OS 12,
right.
is it going to look exactly like an iPad?
Well, from Windows 95, Microsoft has branded themselves of having that toolbar. And it's just something, you know, I mean, even with the changes with Windows XP or Vista, Windows 7, you know, renaming some of the stuff. Instead of add remove programs, it's programs and features. Okay, we got used to that.
Right.
But for the basic part of Windows, clicking on a start bar and dragging what you want out on the screen, it's conducive to a mouse and keyboard.
Right.
This tablet mode isn't. How many folks are going to want to lean over their desk, you know, and play around with touchscreens?
I had somebody doing that the other day. I was working on a MacBook Air, and somebody was over my shoulder, and she kept reaching over and tapping on the screen, yep, trying to get something to work, and saying, what's wrong with this?
You get used to it on your iPad or your tablet.
Yeah.
Right, but and then you forget you can't do that cognitive burden again.
You forget you can't do it.
They should look different. So yeah, that you think different, if you'll let me coin a phrase
yeah
there.
Yeah.
All right.
But yes, definitely. You know, I think it's, you know, and I stand by that person, yep, too, that unless Microsoft wises up and listens to this, and I think it's kind of late anyways, because they're already gearing up for production.
They're done.
Yeah, they're ready to, I think they're already boxing it up, and it's going out in October.
They've got a new logo. They're not going to change.
But the thing of it is, though, is, again, not giving...
Once you get your logo set, you can't change anything?
This is the first time in 25 years Microsoft has changed their logo.
Wow.
So they're really committed now.
Yep.
Oh, they should be committed in other ways.
Yeah, yes.
And again, the other part is that that look is also going to rely on some of the Microsoft App Store,
right?
And there again, I'm sorry, I'm gun shy, in that I have seen Microsoft too many years. I've been doing this too long, and you know, been watching them say, "Oh, well, we got this product, this and this," and they bring it out for a year, and some of them have been less than that. Well, you know, it's really not what we should be doing, so we're dropping it.
Mm-hmm.
So any of the folks that jumped on board, say, like, even, I've said this one before, say a simple one like Microsoft Money.
Yeah.
They had you go to their format and do it, and then try to convert it back to something else after they abandoned it. It was a pain in the butt.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. I have given up on using. It's one of the things that I really like about Google is when you use their apps, you have what's called the Data Liberation Front. And you can download any or all of your data in whatever format you like,
mm-hmm,
to use as you wish. So I do that regularly. If all my documents on Google Doc and Google Drive go away, I don't care. I've got them all now.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you, is for, switching gears there. A good app to work on spreadsheets.
I use either at work, because people want to see Excel spreadsheets. I use
for your tablet.
I use the spreadsheet in Google Docs.
Okay.
In Google Drive now.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
I was trying to figure out how to change some of the cells.
You can do it. You can do all kinds of things with it. You just have to know where it is.
I got
to
figure it. Yeah, I just gave it a few minutes, and I thought, it's Google Docs, because, you know, the Word document part of it is great.
Yeah. You'll be able to do it. You just have to figure out how.
Yeah. It used to be called Google Docs and Sheets, and that was too long, so we shortened it.
Right, to Google Docs. Yeah. Now it's Google Drive.
Which is actually a little longer.
Actually, one letter longer, absolutely. All right, listen.
But it doesn't sound like what it is. Google Docs, okay, it lets you make documents.
Right.
You store them on your Google Drive,
The problem with Google all along has been that they're run by engineers. So their names are just not interesting or conducive to understanding the products. Mm-hmm. That's part of their problem.
Yeah.
So, yes, Google Drive, when it was Google Docs, you would say to yourself, okay, I get it. You're right. I can do word processing and spreadsheets and everything else.
And Google Drive, I think, okay, I can store files on it.
Files on it, but there's create files
right
on it. You just have to
It's that
know.
Cognitive dissonance. There's no
cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, there's no logical connection between the two.
Yep, I completely agree. All right, Joanne has been waiting patiently on the line from Greece, New York. Thank you, Joanne, for your patience.
You're welcome. Well, I have a spreadsheet Excel question, so you were right in the same ballpark.
There you go.
I have Windows 7. And I've had a lot of spreadsheets that I use, and they keep asking me every time I work on one, do I want to keep it with the old format or switch to one of the new formats? And I always pick old, but there are four choices to pick if I want to go to a new something. There's Excel workbook, Excel micro-enabled workbook, Excel binary workbook, and then the Excel 97.
Right.
What do I need to do?
The reason you keep getting this is because you keep keeping the old format.
Yeah.
And it wants to use the new format. The easiest one to pick is just that top one. Excel workbook.
Okay.
The danger there is that if you try to give a file to someone using an old version of Excel, they may not be able to open it.
That's the reason
to keep using the old format.
Yep.
But if you don't share your files with people, then you don't need to worry about that.
No, I don't. Okay. So, but I could use Google Doc, and I could use it any place.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, anywhere you have a browser, anywhere you have an internet connection and a browser.
Okay. I shall do that.
You want to test it. It doesn't really have many limitations, but you want to make sure it's useful for your uses.
Yes, because that's what scares me. They always say you may lose some of your data.
Well, of course, they always say that because that, you know, they have lawyers.
Cover their butt.
They say that. That's exactly
that
right.
Good.
That's their safe word. So,
okay.
Yeah, but I would definitely make sure that it does what you want it to do first. I've been using it for years, and I haven't found anything that it doesn't do that I need to do. That doesn't mean it does everything.
In the Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds good.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye. I have come to love the Google Docs in all cases. They do everything I need to do quickly and easily. I can do it from my cell phone. I can do it from my tablet. I can do it from my desktop, from my laptop, from my Chromebook. All my data are always there all the time. And because of the Data Liberation Front, I can download everything as often as I want to store it and in as many places as I want because they're my data.
Talking about the phones, and I just got a major update on my, you know, because I've got AT&T.
Right.
And they send you a message, oh, you got to do this update. My daughter was telling me about it. So wait till you see the new look of it, Dad. Okay.
Did you get Jelly Bean? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Nice.
So they updated it. And it's like now the App Store works a lot better. And it also fixed an issue that I was having that for a while there it would lock up.
Yep.
And it was locking up on me, even trying to get it restarted. Well, now this redid it, and I can see where some of the other apps are going to have to be updated. Because like one of my very simple calculator program that I downloaded and put on it, you'd think I was half blind. The numbers have gotten so big. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, there's.
I could hold it across the room, look at those numbers, and see them, no problem.
I've heard that from people that you do have to do some adjusting.
Yeah. But no, the whole new interface is very nice. And it also does a better job of downloading and doing the updates. Before, it was always a struggle. But after I did the major update, for about an hour and a half, I just let it sit on my desk and plugged it in because it says, yep, got to update this one, this one, this one, this one.
And they just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we were talking about this last week, talking about apps. One of the apps I'm still disappointed in, mm-hmm. I know it's trivial little stuff, but that one for the key fobs.
Yeah.
That you can put it in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've yet to find one that really works great.
Yep.
I've tried it using it at Wegmans and, you know, putting all these codes in. I take the time to scan it all in and type it all up. Like, oh, great. I don't have to carry all these darn tags. Nope.
Yep.
Yeah, Google Wallet on Android is supposed to do that. And then, what is it, Passbook, I think it is, or Passport on iOS 6 is going to do that, too.
But I have Google Wallet. I haven't set it up yet. I'm still a little leery of near-field communication.
But
I'll tell you what, though. One of the nice things about the next release of the Android Play Store will be that when it updates your apps, instead of downloading the entire app, it will only download the changes. So for people on limited data plans, instead of having to download a 2 meg update, they download a 2K update.
No, what I was going to tell you is maybe you should explain to folks about that other, your apprehension on...
Oh, near-field communications is essentially RFID tags, radio frequency ID tags. Same technology. And what it means is that there's always this little chip that's waiting to be activated by the right signal. And that signal, theoretically, comes from... you can now, at some of the fast food places, you can just wave your card or
wave your credit
phone.
Card, gas stations, fast food, shopping markets.
Right, and they all do that. The problem is you can buy one of those activators yourself, walk down the street, and gather everybody's information.
Yeah, near field is supposed to be, what, less than 6 inches?
Yeah, but it's not.
Well, and even if it was only 6 inches, you walk down a crowded street, you bump into some, you know, it's like a pickpocket. You bump into them.
Yeah.
You don't even have to bump anymore. Just get less than 6 inches away, and you've sucked the information out of their credit cards.
Yeah, just be standing there as they go by in a crowded, you know.
So now everyone's got to keep their credit cards in a Faraday cage. And I've actually seen wallets that have a metal lining in them, so it is a Faraday cage, and so radios don't work through your wallet.
Yeah. And for the NFC, the near field communication in your phone... theoretically, you have to, you know, activate it each time before you buy something. You can't just pick out your phone and wave it. You pick out your phone, start the app, and wave it. So that's something. But I still haven't done it yet.
Yeah, no, I'm a little leery myself. If I could get this stupid app to work on my phone for those, those little fobble cards, that'd be great.
Well, a Google Wallet is supposed to do that, as well as credit cards.
Well, I tried the one for, believe it or not, Topps worked, Wegmans didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you know that the thing works.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, it works, but it's just the way some of the scanners, I guess.
Right, it may depend on how new the scanners are at one store versus another.
Right. We did that most of our trip last week. I was out taking my daughter back to college last week, Rockford, Illinois. It's a nice trip on the way out. On the way back, we had no good luck the last day, the whole trip home eating. We try to eat it in a different restaurant, some local restaurant every night. And on the way up, we had great luck. And on the way back, we did not. We simply did not. But I found that, you know, during the day when we stopped at fast food places, most of them let me wave my thing in front of us, so that was nice. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and we're three-quarters of the way through the first hour of the longest-running computer show in, you know, universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Cheektowaga, New York on the line. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Howdy, hi. Yeah, well, that's the one thing I was wondering about this near-field communications. I definitely would not carry a credit card with one of those chips in it. Matter of fact, I got issued one by HSBC. It's, you know, it had right out of the PayPass or whatever it was. I drilled it out of the card. It's like, no thanks.
Yeah.
I've heard of people returning them and asking for a card without it in it.
Yeah, well, I asked them if they would, and they said, no, this is all we issue. Oh, okay, fine. I, you know, very carefully looked for the irregularity in the card and drilled that right out of the card.
And that's what's amazing, too, is how small and thin those chips are. And there's a radio transceiver in it.
Yep.
Well, and memory and data.
It really doesn't do much. I mean, it. Most of the work, it uses the energy from
inductive
field,
magnetic field, or the radio field to make a magnetic field.
Right. And so there's very little it needs to do except identify itself. That's why it's RFID. It's just an ID number. Everything else is done by the computer back at the ranch. Back at the ranch. But yeah, a lot of people, Joe, are saying I don't want NFC. I haven't turned it on my phone.
Well, that's the thing, though. If it requires you to on your phone, on your Nexus 7 tablet, whatever, if it requires you to turn it on, I don't see the harm because you're at the point of sale terminal. You have to turn it on for this point of sale terminal to recognize it. And you would think that there would be something built into the firmware that would say, well, I'm not going to give up any data unless I get a signed certificate from a recognized, you know, certifying authority.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. But even more to the point, I hate carrying around all these pieces of paper. I think a really, really good application of that would be to transfer a signed receipt to your phone or tablet or whatever, and you can carry an electronic version of your receipt around.
Well, it went, not PayPal, Square. Have you seen the little Square device?
Oh, I don't understand how you can plug that into an iPhone, like, microphone jack and have it work, but...
Oh, it works great.
It does, and what's nice about that is you can then email someone the receipt. And so in that particular case, there's no paper involved. You get it emailed to your email address.
Square's quarterly profits have been showing, too, that a lot of people are using iPhones, iPads, Android tablets as point-of-sale devices.
Yep.
So that's one of the big things in the Apple stores is there's no real cash register. When you're ready to actually pay for what you want, you walk up to one of the employees. He's got his iPhone with his credit card swiper, and they take care of the transaction right there. You email the receipt, and you walk out the door. And the way the Square Reader works is it translates the magnetic stripe, which is numbers, into different sounds, basically. So the microphone jack picks up, in essence, sounds, and then the software translates those sounds back into the number.
It's a very, very clever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In particular, considering that the iDevices don't have a lot of connectivity...
unless
it's a brilliant
you use the docking
way,
port.
Well,
yeah.
It's a brilliant way to make a small, easily carryable thing
We looked into several of the credit card readers that plug into the docking port, and they were like $200. And it was this big, bulky thing that really made the iPhone or iPod Touch even. You have to have an internet connection for the credit card authorization.
Right.
It just made it too big and too bulky. And then Square comes out, and holy cow, how do you get it so small?
Well, exactly.
And it works the nuts, too, because I had a client, you know, you go there and they say, you know, can I pay by credit card? Go, yeah. All right, well, I'll call it in to see it. I can take it. And I quick pulled out my phone, put it in the Square, swiped it, and like you say, boom, got it, and then emailed them the receipt.
Yeah, even regular folk, you're having a garage sale, you think how much more money you can make because people don't carry a lot of cash with them.
Yeah.
Right. And what I have,
and you can get the reader for free. The account is free. You just pay 2.75% per swipe, which is lower than a lot of merchant services are, especially for small companies.
Right. You can get one from PayPal as well.
Intuit also makes one that has software links directly into QuickBooks. So if you're using QuickBooks accounting, it's an easier way to do it. But Square and PayPal both have QuickBooks exports.
Right. And PayPal is 2.7% per transaction. You get the free card reader, the free app, blah 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 blah. It's pretty amazing. It does most payment types, and again, it plugs into the audio jack, and whoosh, it's blue triangular thing, and you swipe it, and you're done. It's ridiculously clever idea, a brilliant solution to a problem, I think.
A triangular thing that they call Square.
Well, that's
The one from Square is Square. The one from PayPal, the back, I think, is square. The front is triangular.
And Square was created by Jack Dorsey, who was the creator of Twitter. He's an MIT graduate. He's 35 now. The jerk. And he's had three successful companies already.
Overachiever. Show off.
Well, yeah. I'm not quite sure why you'd want to do it like that. I'm just thinking... it'd be so easy to damage either the Square or the iPhone. Why wouldn't you make it like link it with Bluetooth? But hey, that's just me.
Well, that makes it a little bigger. Then it needs a battery and a power source and a charger.
And it's really
and if you break one, because we did the other day, they send you another one for free.
Yeah, and I
what do these things got to cost if they can absorb giving away free ones in their 2.75%?
Right.
Well, put it this way, I first saw one at Walmart, of all places, and I think they were like $10.
Right, and then you get a $10 credit on the account you created, so the reader itself in the end is free.
Yeah, they're free. And if you're a PayPal user, get the PayPal one, or get, you know, if you're not, get the Square one.
Yeah, the PayPal one will automatically deposit into your PayPal account. The Square one will go into whatever bank account you tell it to. So that is an issue for some people, but... like your credit card merchant account, you know, if you have a credit card swiper in your business, that money gets debited or deposited into your checking account. So you have to give them your banking information. And so that's sort of the trust you have to have with your credit card company to begin with. And it's, it, you know, you go over your statements daily. I know a lot of people do.
Exactly.
Yep.
And with Square, they deposit the money every day so that you don't have to wait forever like some of the other cards do. We've seen at our store, Amex will sometimes take 2-3 days to process. And say we have 3 charges in one day, they'll deposit 2 of them on one day and a 3rd one on a different day. It makes our accounting horrible trying to track which deposit went with what sale to make sure that they're paying us all the money they're supposed to. They, you know, they always say, "Oh, don't worry about it. It evens out in the end."
No,
we want to worry about it.
Yeah. We'll worry
about it.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, how late are you open? Like 8 o'clock or something like that. Like, if you charge it after 5 or something, it goes on the next day.
Yeah, there is a limit there, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
Well, but that's true of everywhere. Yeah. I mean, there's no place that doesn't do that. You know, so. Yeah.
They might have a midnight processing, so it may.
Yeah, most of them are. For me, it's, you know, you charge it, say, on a Monday, it shows up in my account on a Wednesday.
Right.
Well, the other thing about giving away something for free, I was reading a web article once about how people are stupid when they buy things like iPhones. Like, oh, okay, you get it from a carrier with a 2-year contract. All the consumer can seem to see is that $200 or whatever the carrier is selling it for.
$200 up front, they don't see the $2,000 you're going to pay in the next 2 years.
Yep.
Yeah, indeed. Instead, well, these days you can go to some carriers, trying to think, is it Sprint, Nextel, where they have a prepaid plan? Sure, you spend $600 for the phone, but then your cost of using it is just astronomically less than you would over the 2 years with a contract carrier.
Yep. Right. Well, you can do that now with a lot of carriers, bring your own phone.
Yeah, Apple does it with the iPhone on both AT&T and Verizon. You can buy a phone without a contract, and as you said, you pay the $600 or $700, whatever the full cost of the phone is.
Actually, I have a question for Dave and Nick there. You have the Nexus 7 tablet, right?
Yes.
How long does that take to boot from power on?
Who turns them off?
Yeah, mine just goes in sleep, and then
350 hours of standby. I never turn it off.
Yeah, why would you? And when I do, I just throw it on the charger at night.
And just, well, yeah, actually, that's what I do. I turn it off so it can charge quicker.
It's going to sit on the charger all night anyway. I don't care if it takes 2 hours or 4 hours. I really don't.
And even if it's asleep, it's probably 2 hours or 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. So I never turn mine off. I just hit the button on the side. It's there. Boom. I've never run low on a battery.
I got to tell you, it's probably less than a minute. Yeah. But how much less? I don't know.
I'd say
I only ever did it once.
I think about a minute.
Yeah, because my Pan Digital tablet, it takes about a minute and a half to boot. It's just annoyingly long.
Yeah, I had a friend with one of those, and it worked so horrible. You know, QVC special of the day. It was so horrible, she gave up on it.
Yeah.
It took forever to boot. Couldn't ever get connected to the Wi-Fi. Had
most
trouble.
It was sold
through Barnes & Noble, so it came with the Barnes & Noble app to get books on it.
Right.
That would never work right.
But that Nexus 7, though, is just super fast. You know, it's one of the few with a gig of memory standard. And like I say, I got the 8-gig model versus Nick got the 16. And I haven't even filled up half.
I haven't even filled up half
of my Nexus with the 8-gig, and I've got a couple books on there. I've got photos, you know, and tons of apps. You know, it automatically pulled down the minute I hooked it up and said, "Oh, wait a minute, you got these on your phone. You want to put these over here?" And I selected it, boom, 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 and it did it. It did it all once it knew I had a Gmail account. Says, "You're good to go." And I just sat there. And I was in awe because it just boom, 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 boom.
One of the things that I have discovered with the Nexus 7 tablet is that my battery on my phone lasts longer because I do less on it now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You got that bigger screen. It's nicer to use.
Yep.
The clarity, too.
Yeah, but that was a never turn the point here, Joe, is that I never turn mine off because it's 350 hours of standby.
Yeah, why bother?
Why bother? Sorry, you're
going to say. We've been talking about where a 7-inch iPad would fit in the market because of the iPod Touch. We had a thought at the office, discontinue the iPod Touch.
That's probably what's going to happen.
And sell the 7-inch iPad at the $200, $300,
$400. But then what about the people who want the smaller form size?
Buy an iPhone.
And then don't put it on a contract.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's where, like you, my iTouch.
iPod Touch?
I've got an iPod Touch, and the only thing I use that for now is music.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I differentiate mine. Podcasts in the car is my iPod Touch. Everything else is my iPad.
The apps and everything else, I've just taken it off, and it's all storage for my music.
Well, as I said, my old phone is now my iPad. iPod.
Yeah.
Because I've turned off, it's in airplane mode, so all the radios are off. I turn on the wireless when I want to update or download a book or music. Other than that, it's essentially a 64 gig iPod, and so I call it my iPod because it's Android. Yeah. But it's basically the same thing. I listen to music, I listen to podcasts, I can look at pictures on it, I can do whatever I want.
Well, it is nice to have the 7-inch tablet that I have, but that is the one thing. It's a little bulky for carrying around for listening to MP3s. That's why my Palm Pilot actually is somewhat useful.
Well, on the other hand, I have tested that, and what I ended up with was I could put it in my bag and listen via Bluetooth.
Yeah, that's true.
I have a Bluetooth headset. I don't have to be connected to it, right? I start it up, turn off the screen, put it in my bag, and listen to music all the time without having to worry about it. And I get 9 or 10 hours on that. So when I get to work, I can leave the music turned on listening to it. I plug it in at work and recharge it. Then I listen to it all the way home, plug it in at home. I'm done.
One last question for you. Can you put the thing to sleep by pressing the power button?
To sleep? Yeah. You just turn.
When I press power momentarily on my tablet, it goes to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Mine goes just go after so many. It's a minute or so.
It's an auto sleep too.
It just goes auto sleep.
Yeah, but you can also hit the switch and it goes to sleep, but the music keeps playing or whatever you're doing.
Yeah. True. All right. Thanks a lot. It looks like you got to go soon anyway.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
And
thanks, Joe.
And I did find on the Square website their time cutoff is 5 p.m. Pacific. So all transactions before 5 p.m. Pacific are sent to your bank at 8 p.m. Pacific that day. So here in Rochester, if a transaction is made after 8 p.m. at night, it will go in the day after, the next day.
At noon.
At 8 p.m. 8 p.m. Pacific the next night.
Oh, 8 p.m. Pacific.
Right, so it's like banking hours. You make a deposit in your bank at 3 o'clock on Monday. It's really Tuesday in the bank, so it'll go in Wednesday.
All right, if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We will get to you after the break, but we are going to take a short break so that we can catch our breath and I can go get some more water. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. You have wasted a full hour of your life, but in case you didn't do it as well as you might have, you're going to have another chance on the other side, because we're going to be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. And we are right here every week on member-supported Jazz 90.1. So stay tuned, and thanks to all of you who are members for supporting us.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I'm rehydrated, and we have Jerry from Greece on the line. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got a problem with the HP desktop. It's 6 years old, and a couple years ago I added new memory to it, and it's been working fine. But the other day I went to turn it on, I just have a black screen, and I'm getting the beep codes out of it, like 20 beeps per minute, just a constant beep.
Well, that's telling you, go to the store and get another machine.
Yeah, if you look at your computer's manual, it will probably tell you what those beep codes mean.
Yeah, my manual doesn't say anything about those beep codes, so I was on a...
Well, sometimes it's looking for them. Sometimes it's not in the user's guide. It's in the technical guide or the service guide.
Okay.
Yeah, but usually that's a motherboard going.
Motherboard? Okay.
I think. Yeah, I mean, if you had another machine, you could Google 20 beep error code.
Yeah, I got another machine, so that's 20 beep. Yeah, I was trying to do some Googling, but then...
But the thing of it is, though, here's the thing. It could be 20, but is it long short for a combination of 20?
They're constant long beeps, the same duration for 20 beeps for a minute.
And then it pauses, and then 20 beeps again?
Yeah, pause, a beep, pause, beep, pause.
Oh, no, that's one beep. Because there would be a beep. And then a pause, right.
And a pause, but this repeats.
Right, right. It'll keep repeating.
20 times a minute.
Right. Yeah, well, okay. But that's only one beep then.
Yeah, one beep.
Okay. If it would do 20 beeps and then pause if it was a 20.
Beep, pause, beep, 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 pause, beep, beep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a refresh failure. The memory refresh circuitry on the motherboard is faulty.
So
it's not the RAM that got put in. It's the motherboard itself.
What you can try doing is reseeding your memory cards.
That might
work, but probably not.
No, it can't hurt, but it's probably not the problem.
Yeah, it's the flash memory on the motherboard, like Nick just said. Yeah. And you already said how old that machine is?
Six.
You know what? All right, hear me now, remember me later. Right now is a good time for all you folks with XP machines.
Yeah.
XP machines, seriously consider buying a new machine right now with Windows 7 on it before you get stuck being told, no, you have to go to Windows 8.
Okay.
And if you want to take a look for you folks, if you're not sure whether you want to do Windows 8 or Windows 7, you know, PC Magazine has a review on Windows 8. You can see the interface. They've got a whole YouTube thing of it, and there's plenty of YouTubes out there that you can see what Windows 8 you're going to be in store for. And like that news article that we read at the beginning of the show says, most folks that are comfortable with the Windows that they've been using for years are going to be a little reluctant to accept Windows 8 with open arms, even after they see the video. Because it is going to be a major paradigm shift in the way you do things.
Okay.
So anybody with Windows XP, consider looking at a Windows 7 machine right now, because I believe Windows 8 is rolling out in October.
September, October, somewhere in there, yeah.
And grab them while you can, you know, and get these Windows 7 machines. I mean, you might even still, even after Windows 8 comes out for a couple months, still maybe.
Maybe, but I wouldn't plan on it.
Yeah, they usually call it a downgrade.
Right.
But I'd push to get a Windows 7 machine now, and they're probably going to get some good deals on them because they want to get them out of the store to get the new Windows 8 machines in that they're going to be stuck with.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right, sir.
Thanks for the advice.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, I agree with you. We've got way too many people who are going to be horribly unhappy with Windows 8. I predict now, you hear me and remember me later, we're going to start getting a bunch of calls saying, I just bought a new PC with Windows 8. How do I get Windows 7?
Yeah.
Or what I expect we'll see is someone will figure out a way to remove the Metro interface.
Well, that'll happen.
Because it has to be there in some way to let old programs run. Because when you run the old, the current version of, say, Word, it reverts to the old interface.
But but once again, what Microsoft is doing is the same thing that Google is doing. They've got Office Live or whatever, Office 365. And it's an online version of Office.
Okay.
Which right now is free, by the way. If you don't need to work offline, then you don't have to buy Office. If you do want to work offline, you have to buy Office. But if you don't want to work offline, you don't have to buy Office. You can run it off of Live 365. Although it's a little clunky, at least when I tested it, I still prefer...
OpenOffice is still better.
OpenOffice is better, certainly. And I still prefer Google Docs for when I'm working online. But Microsoft has that. And what they're eventually going to say is you don't need to buy... Although Office is their number one selling product, so yeah. I don't know how that's going to work.
Well, it's being changed, or not changed. In addition, they're adding a licensing issue. So Office for small business, you get $6 per user per month,
right?
Which might be cheaper than the $400 per user that the Microsoft Office packaging box cost.
That's going to drive folks to OpenOffice even more.
Mm-hmm.
Why pay for something monthly?
Well, because you can bill that.
Because people have been using Office forever.
Yeah, but you can go to OpenOffice and save yourself.
They don't know. Free. They don't know enough about enough people don't know about it to make a difference.
Well,
yet.
You know, we got to just keep.
And Microsoft
the word out
has a lot of sales reps.
Well, and more importantly, Steve is right. If you're in a billing situation like your law office, you just take $6 onto the bill, mm-hmm. and you've paid for it over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Office 365 right now is free, but I'll bet there's going to be a pro version.
All right, but going...
These are the pricing plans for it.
Oh, but Nick, but like you said, though, you add $6 onto the bill, but that instead of passing it onto the bill, put it in my pocket and get something for free.
Yeah.
Well, I completely agree with you, but what I'm saying is, and apparently Office 365 is not free anymore.
It doesn't appear to
seeing?
Be. Yeah.
It was when I tried it, because I wouldn't have tried it.
There's a free trial available.
No, it was actually free, but now it's apparently you pay per month for it. So that's,
And again, how long are they going to keep that around?
It's a 30-day free trial currently. You
know, they'll try that for a while, and how long before they abandon that?
Well, it's a second revenue stream. You can buy the box, or you can subscribe and pay a monthly fee. Adobe has done the same thing with their Creative Suite.
And the reality is,
it's like
Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Once you've got your documents in here, unlike, is there an equivalent to the Data Liberation Front in here? Can I take my data back out? If not, now you're the little Chinese finger trap.
Oh.
You're in there because you can't get your data back out. I've got a month's worth of documents. Yeah. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll probably end up buying it.
I'll just end up paying the $6 bucks a month or whatever it is, plus $4 a month for email, or is that in addition?
That's email only. So but you can have 50,000 users. Yeah, so if you're doing so, this is geared toward businesses. So instead of paying that $200 or $300 per user license to buy Microsoft Office, you can pay $4 to $6 a month. Per user. So if you've got 10 people in your office, say that's $4,000 you have to pay for 10 copies of Office, or $60 a month. So that's a lot less.
Ish.
Well, yeah. in the short run, and we know how big American corporations are tied to the short run.
Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly right. I pay more in the long run, but I saved money this month, so give me my extra million.
What have you done for me this quarter?
Yeah, exactly.
No lie.
So this includes shared calendars and web-based Excel and PowerPoint and cloud-based email. So yes, there you go. You can use your own domain name. But here's, and I have to just ask this question. This seems to be all the stuff that I'm getting from Google for free.
Yep. Yeah.
Microsoft's just trying to get it.
It's
folks that don't know and don't trust Google yet.
I'm surprised.
Right, and it's, as I've said, it's whose Kool-Aid have you drunk?
Right, and I'm surprised you at the school haven't gotten Microsoft reps coming in, because you have been a big Office shop, haven't you?
Who said we don't?
Oh, you haven't mentioned it before.
Oh, no, we have Microsoft all the time. Well, we have a...
Yeah, you want to switch to this, don't you?
We have site licenses.
Yeah.
So right now, there's no incentive for us to do anything but keep handing out copies of...
Yeah,
Office, because they're free.
Like $10 to the user, kid, I think.
For the students, they can buy the student edition.
We see that a lot in our shop.
But our faculty, we it's funny money. We do chargebacks.
Yeah,
Right, and it's all fake money for us. So
you charge their department because you paid the license fee already.
Right.
Yeah.
So
if you look, if you work this backwards, you know, for 50,000 users, it's $8 per user per month.
Right, which is $400,000 a year.
Right. Are your licensing fees less than that?
Yeah. Yep. Yes, shockingly they are. Yes.
As a advanced learning environment.
Right. But yeah, so I guess, you know, it's just whose Kool-Aid have you drunk? And I do get that. Mm-hmm. I prefer free. Always have. Always and, will. And you
gotta,
if it's a good quality product, it's free.
You got to think that Microsoft is seeing Google Docs for free, and this is their answer. At, you know, $8 or $6 per month for small business, $6 per user per month, compared with free for Google Docs. You know, that's almost a no-brainer. Okay, I'll do free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're banking on people not knowing about Google Docs.
Yep. Or trusting it.
Who doesn't know about Google Docs?
Yeah.
But yes, and well, for those who have drunk the Kool-Aid, it's cheap, and that's the way that works.
Yep.
I get it. I do. But I've always preferred good quality free to good quality pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's that simple. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Hilton, New York. Hi, Judy. What's up?
Hi, folks. Well, I'm listening with anticipation here with the warning that was given about going to XP 7. So,
Windows 7.
Windows 8.
7. Yeah, Windows 7 on XP.
Yeah.
So, how do I change?
You mean to get a machine with Windows 7 instead of having to get a machine with Windows 8?
Well, yeah. Is there any chance of just getting the program for Windows 7 and putting it on your computer?
No, most of the older machines won't handle Windows 7. Any XP machine usually, on the average, is, 4+ years.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So if your machine is 4+ years old,
yeah,
you want to just get a whole new machine.
You might be able to run it, but boy, are you going to have to be
and you'd spend more trying to upgrade it than is worth it. A new machine would be a better idea.
And then all the information that's on there, what do I do with that so I can have it on my 7?
What you would do is you'd find a company that will do the transfer. We do. I mean, usually
there's a migration tool built into Windows, but it's not very easy for the layperson to use.
What we normally do is, you know,
in fact, the name of it, it's the Files and Settings Transfer Wizard.
Yeah.
That tells you right off the bat it's not for the layperson to use.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay.
But normally what we do, though, is, if I can just interject here for a second, when we sell a system, and I'm sure Steve does this too, we offer to take your data, your emails, your photos, your documents, and all that other stuff, the data, and move that over. You will still have to install, say, if you were using QuickBooks or something else like that, still have to reinstall the programs, the same with Office.
We do that as a service, too. Yeah.
We can, but, you know, we do that for you so you don't lose any of that information.
And the caveat can be the longer you've waited between upgrading, the more you might run into old incompatible programs. So if you're still using, say, Office 98 and you buy a new computer, it's not going to work.
Okay.
You're going to have to buy the new version of Office, or like we've been saying, OpenOffice or one of the other free alternatives.
Yep.
So it's one of those catch-22s. Your computer's working fine. You don't need to upgrade it. But eventually, when you do upgrade, you're going to have to upgrade a lot of things.
So it's better to buy the machine.
Don't wait more than 3 or 4 years before you start really considering upgrading. I know a lot of people keep the machine 6, 7, 8 years, and that's fine. But then when they do upgrade, it ends up costing a lot more because they have to upgrade all their software, too.
And at this point, you're going to find that when you upgrade to Windows 8, you may, in fact, end up hating it. And now you're stuck.
Because it's so different than Windows 7 and previous versions.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's a major... We're not fool. You know, we're not doing this. We're not being paid or...
Well,
you know,
I understand.
You know, we're just trying to warn folks that there is... And like I say, if you want to really look and see... Go to Google and Google... Or go to YouTube and Google, or search for Windows 8. And there's plenty of YouTubes out there showing you the look and feel of Windows 8.
Mm.
And you'll be surprised.
And you may love it. God bless you.
I thought we wouldn't like it.
I suspect you won't, but what I'm saying
is... It's very, very different, but some people will like it.
Some people will like it.
Well, if you're used to a tablet, you're okay with it.
Our neophytes probably won't like it.
Exactly. Thank you.
And but, that's me.
Yeah.
Right.
So, or the rare person who's never had a computer at all won't know the difference.
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah. This is a big people that would be.
Yeah.
Right. This is a big opportunity right now for Linux.
Yeah.
Because with Linux, you can get... Because with Linux, you can get whatever front end you want. I have a couple of front ends that look exactly like Windows, a couple that look very close to the Mac, a couple that look like nothing else. You can buy a machine with whatever you want. You can get it with LibreOffice or OpenOffice and be perfectly happy. And, of course, all of that is free. Judy, we got to run.
Yeah, and I had another question about
We'll talk to you on the other side. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enner.
And I'm Steve Ray.
24 minutes after the hour, we've got Judy Ann from Hilton still on the line for her second question. Hi, Judy. What's up?
Hi. So, I take it to the shop. They switch it to Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got the machine there.
Yeah.
Do they take that for me?
Well, here's how it works with our shop. You would, order a system. We'd call you when it came in.
Uh-huh.
You'd bring in your old machine, and we would then transfer all your data, and then you walk out with your old machine and your new one.
Some companies also will recycle your old computer. There's usually a fee for recycling computers,
right.
But it can be done if you don't want to physically keep the old machine yourself. A lot of people like that, and they'll stick it in the closet somewhere and look at it in 10 years and go, "Oh, I remember using that."
Or that's the great
machine. Not me.
Well, but that's the great machine to learn Linux on.
Yeah, put it on an older machine because Linux doesn't have that much that big of a footprint.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, we can do all that for you, and we can, if you buy a machine from us, we'll also dispose of your machine for you.
Okay. Because in the past, if you take it in to, I don't know, like Sun King or something, and then there's a fee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most recycling companies charge a fee to recycle electronics
because
they have to hire people to break it down and recycle it. There's a big one in town, Regional Computer Recycling and Recovery, at ewaste.com, and they quite often have amnesty days, usually right after Christmas because they know people got new electronics, and where they will accept anything at no fee. And a lot of towns and communities have their own recycling programs in the town itself, often for free, and quite often you see churches and community organizations doing a recycling. At ewaste.com they list a lot of the community organizations as well.
I think I'll look under there.
Yeah, because computers are technically considered hazardous waste because of all the chemicals and the cadmium is really big in monitors.
Uh-huh.
You can't just throw it in the regular garbage.
Right.
Although the joke is you put it at the end of your driveway with the garbage, it would be gone in an hour anyway.
Yeah, mine.
Not anymore. Now they just rip them open, take out the hard drives, and leave everything else.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And that's a big thing for anyone. If you are recycling your computer, one of the things we recommend is take the hard drive out and keep the hard drive because that's got all your data on it.
I usually destroy them with a sledgehammer.
You need to physically destroy the hard drive to prevent anyone from getting your data off of it.
What I like, though, is, and this is just a side one, when you put stuff out to the street, I had somebody, no lie, I put it out there, I'm back working on my yard, they turned, pulled over, checking it out. Does this work? No, I'm not.
That's why I put it out on the curb. I don't want anything that works. We're the Adams family. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
I did see a house the other day on my way home from work. They had like 5 CRT televisions at the end of the driveway.
Oh,
they work. Haul them away, please.
Okay, I think I'm set to go now.
There you go. Thanks, Judy.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Oh, we used to have bets, because I'm right there on Empire Boulevard, people coming by, how long things would last.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll put it out there during the day, and we'll kind of keep track of, it's gone, who won, as far as how long it lasts. I even one time pulled out a plant, this one bush, when I was first moving in, ripped it out, and I put it by the curb. I see this caddy pull up door opens up, person leans over and looks at it, grabs it, just shoves it behind the back seat, closes the door, and the vehicle takes off.
Now, the person you bought your house from spent years of time and effort making those bushes look nice and pretty.
Not this one. Not this one.
Some bushes are volunteers. They just grow wherever they want.
Yeah, and I've done major work on that house, you know, over in the past 8 years that I've been there. But when I first got there, you know, the house was built in 1928. Like Nick's, you know, it's old, and I brought back a lot of the beauty to it and uncovering, you know, 8 layers of paint off of beautiful gumwood. Because I go to Nick's house, and it's like, oh, this is so gorgeous.
American chestnut.
Yes.
Gumwood's on the second floor where nobody sees it. We had American chestnut in the first
but
floor.
But, you know, your floors and all the woodwork around.
Rochester
and the
floors, yeah.
The pocket doors. You know, I've got a pocket door, but mine's a newer one.
And all the stained glass.
Oh, yes. It's just gorgeous.
Thank you. I love my house.
And, you know, I've got all hardwood floors. And, you know, like I say, the entryway now with the big, thick 2-inch door with the leaded glass entry, you know, and that's still got the original marble.
I never
really
thought about it, but I went to a friend's house who'd been built in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and I realized his front door was thinner than my interior doors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And I thought, seriously? So it's done now.
Yeah, and but you know, I got a
2x4s aren't 2x4 anymore.
Oh hell,
18-inch centers aren't 18 inches anymore. Mm-mm. It's just
it's a whole different world, you know, in there. And but you know, it's I've updated quite a bit of it. You know, new roof and all that type of stuff, and the windows. When I had this guy come over and do the windows, they had to take out the leaded weights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure,
he made a pile of them on the front
counterweights,
porch.
Yeah.
And he goes, there's all those lead weights. I go, go ahead. He goes, do you want them? I go, no, you can have them. Because he did some other work for me. You sure? Hey, you did this for me. You take that. Oh, okay. So he took all the lead weights from 21 windows.
Yeah, yeah. There's at least 42 of them.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, whoa.
So then he sold them to the antique store for $1,000 a piece.
No, it's scrap metal, lead.
Lead, I mean, lead is worth more as lead than it is as sinkers.
Yeah. you can't even make sinkers now. You can't even buy sinkers because I just bought some.
Right. You can't make them lead anymore.
Because I used to. Back in the day with my dad, he used to have, we'd get lead because our friend worked at the phone company, and they'd get strips of lead. We'd melt it down. We had this little, I remember, it was maybe 2 inches wide, about 6 inches long, and it had a screw at the end. It was half metal. You put it together, screw it tight, and you pour lead in the top.
Yep, and you make sinkers out
of it. Made sinkers, big ones and small ones, and that's how we did it.
There was an episode of Pawn Stars where this guy wheels in on a cart, you know, like, 1,000 pounds of gold that he was ready to sell. And it was like a 500-pound single ingot that was this giant thing. And the old man loves his gold. They had to test it for gold. So they drilled a hole through the center of the giant gold bar to make sure it was gold all the way through, and then bought it at gold price. And the old man, the father, the owner, you know, oldest guy in the show, if you don't watch the show, he just liked to lay and look at it. And so they end up making gold coins with the old man's face on it.
Nice.
And they're selling it for just over the gold
one
price.
One of the things that I have to admit, I don't watch these shows, but I see the commercials all the time. I now have this perverse urge to go into a pawn store and look around.
What show was that on? Some cop show I was watching, there was a murder in a pawn shop. And it was Warehouse 13.
Yeah.
And she walks in. Oh, this doesn't look anything like the TV show.
Yeah.
And the pawn store owner said, I wish they'd stop showing that show because it's giving our business a bad name.
Yep. All right. I'm going to read this news article. Apple has apparently removed videos of its series of three divisive genius ads from both its website and its YouTube channel. The move suggests that Apple wasn't happy with the overall reaction to the ads, which was largely critical of the fact that the ads appeared to paint Mac users as clueless. I would have said stupid. The series of genius ads, which premiered during the opening ceremonies of the 2012 Summer Olympics, featured Mac users caught in ostensibly emergency situations, like putting together a keynote presentation before a plane lands or ignoring his about-to-give-birth wife to get a computer question answered.
Well, you got to take videos of the birth.
Yeah, the cheerful Apple genius is there to help customers in need, or so the message goes. But critics said that Apple's attempt to inject humor into the ads actually ended up making its customers look stupid. The last thing it wants is to win new customers at the cost of looking ridiculous to its enthusiastic supporters, noted Ken Siegel, the former TBWA Hyatt Day creative director who spent years working with Steve Jobs to market the company's products. The implementation is cheesy, too cheesy even for an Apple ad, and borderline smarmy in all cases, said Ars Technica senior Apple editor Jackie Chang in a staff blog post. The ads make Apple seem a little too smug for comfort. Apple stopped running them as the Olympics wound down, so it was clear that the campaign may not have been expected to last anyway, but it's still strange that Apple removed all traces of them so soon. Apple kept its decidedly far more popular Get a Mac ads on its website for a much longer time after retiring the campaign. Apple still has an iPhone 4 ad from November of 2010 posted in its YouTube channel. It's possible that Apple decided it was embarrassed by the ads and didn't want a reminder of its misstep. So, did you love or hate the genius ads? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Jerry did from Fairport, New York. Hi, Jerry. What's up?
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Peachy. How are you?
Not too bad. A little warm, but the reason
summer.
I was calling, just kind of, I was listening to you on my drive home here, and I heard the lady upgrading and how we got off on the subject of the recycling and stuff.
Yeah.
Just kind of as an FYI, again, I'm over here in Fairport. I've got two places over here, you know, these can and bottle recycling places.
Sure.
That have ads for free electronics recycling.
Oh, nice. Well,
that's nice. Cool.
Yeah, free. You know, who doesn't want free, right?
So, yep,
you know,
that's
I've already
point.
Had a problem. And, you know, you pay for it up front, you pay for it in the middle, and you pay to get rid of it.
Yep.
You know, I've never been a fan of that, so... no, these places have got, big semi-trailers that, you know, semi-permanently park there. And, you know, when you take your recyclables, take your old electronics and get money for one and get the other crap away for free.
That's exactly right.
What's the name of it? Oh, the town of Parrington has one itself.
Yeah, just outside of the village. There's two that I know of on Fairport Road. One is... I think it's Easy Can
well,
Recycling.
Well, people can look
like
those
that.
Up by yeah. typing free.
And the other one is Can King.
Yep.
People cool. can look those up themselves by.
I live in Fairport and never found them.
Well, there you go. You know,
haven't
there.
Accidentally found them yet.
Right. Right. All right.
Well,
excellent.
You know, if you know where Jefferson Ave is, the Friendly's there. It's you know within a stone's throw of there. I mean,
I go by there all the time.
They're literally right across the road from one another. So.
Perfect.
Nice.
Thanks,
Jerry. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, a lot of communities have their own recycling as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I've done that in the past. I don't know how long these places have been doing it. I believe it's probably, you know, no more than a year old tops.
Right,
but,
right.
But, I just want to throw that out there.
Good to know. Thanks, Jerry.
No problem.
Yeah, people are beginning to recycle more and more stuff, and that's a good thing. My wife is the recycle Nazi in our home. Luckily, she's not listening right now, so
friend,
I can say that.
A friend of mine, her parents moved up from...
That doesn't go there. It doesn't have a number. Okay.
Friend's parents moved from Florida, and apparently their community didn't recycle. And she's having the hardest time convincing them they have to recycle and separate the garbage.
I believe in recycling. I believe in separating the garbage. I just am not good at figuring out this... doesn't have a number. My
ones
eyes are
and
old
twos.
To begin with.
Ones yep. and twos.
No, one through sevens now, according to Elaine. Trust me, she would know. So you can recycle pretty much anything that has a number. So I look at the thing and said, that's a number, but my eyes are old and
yep.
so.
Well, I was surprised when they we got a little note from our garbage company saying that pizza boxes were now okay. Because it used to
right.
be they didn't want any food products and you know pizza boxes you know full of grease and oils were apparently cost more to recycle than so apparently they're taking them now
right
and then unfortunately we use a lot of pizza boxes
right. Right back to the phones. Dennis in Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis.
Hi guys.
Can you hear him now? Okay, Dennis.
When you were first talking about Linux and. He gave me instructions on how to what I needed to do to download it and everything, and then how to put it on an older machine. but I haven't got a clue where those instructions are. So can you tell me which version? I mean, I guess there's different types of Linux or something?
Well, there's different versions of Linux. Linux is a free operating system, and lots of companies are putting out versions. One of the most popular is Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U.
Mm-hmm.
Linux Mint, M-I-N-T, is another very popular version.
Okay.
Linux Mint is nice because it's green. I like the color green. I've changed Ubuntu into green. Both are very good. Both are very good operating systems. And which one you pick, it's kind of mox-nix. Doesn't matter.
Now you mentioned you had a lot of front ends, and one of them looked like a lot like Windows. Which would either of those Linux versions handle different front ends?
Yes. Every Linux version can do that. That's something you have to sort of install by yourself.
Okay.
But what's nice about that is, in the newer versions of Linux, when you go to log in, there's a little login place that shows you your name and asks for your password. Next to your name is a little circle. If you click on that circle, it shows you all the front ends that are installed.
Oh.
And so you pick the one you want. And you can go in and install other front ends. You just have to know the names of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's GNOME, G-N-O-M-E, K-D-E, XFCE, LXDE are the four big ones. There are half a dozen lesser ones. And so you can, Unity is the one that comes with Ubuntu now. So you can install them all and play around and pick the one you like. Linux is all about your decision, your choice. You get to do what you want. Like I said, in general, you've got to have a little bit of knowledge in order to do that. You got to know the names and how to install software, but also there's the local Linux users group. They called Lugor. They meet from September to May, I think, or no, September to June or July. I don't know. September to something.
Their next meeting is Thursday, September 20th at Nazareth, and Elvis is going to be there presenting apt-get.
Oh, thank you very much.
and Carl's going to be presenting Irisi, and Charles will be presenting Freenode.
There you go. All good programs, by the way. And that's one of the nice things about that. There are a billion programs under Linux that are all free.
You have to go to an app store or something to get those?
Well, they have what they call repositories, and it's what everybody else calls an app store. Linux has had them for 100 years.
Okay.
And it's basically a repository of all the available software. Believe me, app stores are not new.
Okay.
There's a repository of all the software, and you run what's called the software center on some, the software, I forget what they call them, but basically that's it. And you go to that software center, and you can say, you know, I want an office suite, and it shows you the various office suites. You pick whichever one you like.
All right. I think happened last time is I downloaded Linux and onto a disk. I probably didn't do it correctly, and then I couldn't do anything with it, so I threw the thing in the garbage.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. You can't just copy the download onto the disk. You have to do what's called burn an ISO, the contents of the file that you've burned onto the disk.
Right. And Joe would like me to remind you that the keyword is window manager or desktop environment. That's what you're looking for when you want to change it. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Thank you, Dennis. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 41 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Dennis on the line? No, we don't. No, we do not. We talked about
the Linux question. Yep.
But basically, what you need to do is as Steve said, you don't just copy the file to a CD. You create an ISO, which is a separate function, and how you do that depends on what software you're using. But once you've got the ISO, it becomes a bootable CD. Maybe that's the term it uses in your software, is a bootable CD, and then you just simply boot the machine with that CD. One of the nice things about it is
Windows has an ISO program built in. You have to download it. There are free ones. Yeah. The Mac does. Disk Utility on the Mac will make ISOs.
Right.
So you need an extra program under Windows to make a bootable ISO CD.
Well, you need an extra program under anything except on other operating systems that are free. Or they're built in already. They're available under Linux as well. But one of the nice things about Linux is that when you go to install it, it will say, oh, I see you've already got Windows in this machine. Do you want to get rid of it or do you want to dual boot? So you can dual boot and still have Windows on that machine if you want. But as we were talking about with Judy, if it's an old machine, you don't need Windows on it anymore. In fact, it's probably illegal to keep Windows on it. So you would then just simply erase it and have a fully Linux machine. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. This is an old electrician friend of yours.
Hiya, Bill.
I built your office, if you remember.
I do.
I call once in a while when I get frustrated. My wife and I have just bought two iPhone 4Ss, and I still have my home PC, and I was trying to install the iCloud as instructed, and I got through all the knickknacks that it tells you to do. And when I open the iCloud control panel, the only thing that I'm able to check on the boxes for options are the two at the bottom, photos and documents. The mail and the other three at the top are grayed out. I can't have access to it. So I deleted it and double downloaded it, and it goes back to the same thing. I did all the create the new me at me email thing, and I am stuck trying to get these two phones to match up with my home PC.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. What are you using as your Apple ID? And if you're using the free...
I'm using my regular... I had to create a new email. My first name and part of my last name, at me. And then the emails that I still have in my iPhones are my regular email accounts.
Right, yeah. You don't have to create a me.com account to use with iCloud, but you can.
It wouldn't let me go any further by not doing it, so okay.
Well, no, you can create an iCloud account, but you don't have to create a me.com mail account. You can use your existing, you know, for example, mine uses my Roadrunner email address, is my
that's
Apple ID.
That's what I want to do, exactly.
Right, so that's what you do when you create your iCloud account, is use that address. What that doesn't let you do is synchronize your mail between your devices, because syncing mail generally is only for the me.com addresses. Contacts and calendars depends on what programs you have on your computer. You need to have Microsoft Outlook I just had this for another quote in the forums. You need a program that does contacts and calendars on your PC in order to synchronize it to your PC. Let me see if I can find that link again.
Right, because you can't link it to nothing. You have to link
right.
it to something.
So you have to have a contact and calendar program in Windows in order to synchronize your phone to it.
Well, I have this 2003 version of Outlook, and I have put all my phone addresses in. I'm using Windows Live.
You need 2000
for my email, but it does not sync with iCloud.
You need Outlook 2007 or later to synchronize with iCloud if you're using Outlook.
I see. Okay.
And then it will also use Windows Address Book in Windows 7 or Vista. I'm not sure if it does XP. I'm frantically trying to find that link I found earlier. Okay. Yeah, so you can use Windows Address Book to synchronize your contacts.
All right.
So
the trouble with the contacts I'm having is putting them in groups. I have people who are my tennis partners, golf partners, business partners.
Right.
And then trying to send all that up into the phones just did not work.
Okay, here we go. There's the button I was looking for. So on the PC, yeah.
No way I could ever plan that.
Yeah, so it'll synchronize with Outlook Express, Windows Address Book on XP, or Windows Contacts in Vista and 7. And I can post a link on how to do that as well. The problem
is I got a pencil right here ready to go.
It's
a lot of steps.
Yeah, it's Apple Knowledge Base HT1386.
We'll put a link up.
Yeah.
Be it on your website?
Yep.
I'll go get it.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's basically you need the program in your computer. I was answering a question in the forums where someone was using Thunderbird for their mail and contacts. That yep. doesn't sync with iCloud.
Right.
So you have to export from Thunderbird into the Windows address book and Windows Outlook in order to get it to sync up to iCloud.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So a lot, depends on what.
I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just missing a basic program.
Right.
Well, yeah, you're missing one of the requirements that is hard to see when you're going through the pages because it's in the fine print down at the bottom.
But once you check out this link that Steve is about to post and you give it a minute or two and it'll be there, and then you can check it out and let us know how it worked for you.
I will do that. I've been following you guys for years, so I appreciate the help.
Oh, you're the one. I knew somebody was behind
there
us.
There is one out there.
Thanks, Bill.
I don't know, Nick, if you remember me or not, but out of RIT, I wired your office.
I do remember you.
Year,
I do.
So now you know who you're talking to. Okay.
Yep. Thanks, Bill.
Big fan. Thanks.
Thanks. Have fun. Yeah, we wiring my office was a bit of an adventure. There was a lot to be done. I've got a lot of jacks coming into my office. Well, back in my old building, I was in a very big office, and I was essentially storage and extra servers before we started virtualizing everything.
Oh, that, and that's where we had our server for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Soundbite server. I remember going to your office and setting that up. Whoa.
That's exactly right.
Where is that now, physically? Do we care? We don't know, do we? We don't care,
It is not physically anywhere. It is now a virtual server.
Better left undiscussed.
Yeah, better left undiscussed. This is an interesting news item as well. A flaw discovered recently in Apple's iPhone could allow nefarious people to hack SMS messages. According to Adaptive Mobile, iPhones stand alone in this security hole. Adaptive Mobile tested the exploit in the iPhone and compared it to Android, BlackBerry, Symbian, and Windows Mobile. All the other platforms remain secure in their treatment of SMS messages. The bug, which was unearthed a couple of weeks ago by researcher Pod2G, essentially allows hackers to spoof the reply to number in a text message. Originally, it was thought that every SMS system was vulnerable to this. The reason for this news item is that it is only iOS. Historically, the reply to address was introduced to allow users to reply to text that were broadcast, right, from information agencies or marketing firms. But most handsets now ignore this and treat the reply address field correctly, which is basically to ignore it. Its research confirms this to be true with Google's Android RIMS, BlackBerry, Nokia, Symbian, and Microsoft's Windows Mobile platforms. Apple alone has left a significant vulnerability in its handsets. Apple responded to the issue but didn't really offer much of a fix. Apple takes security very seriously, they said. When using iMessage instead of SMS, addresses are verified. One of the limitations of SMS is that it allows messages to be sent with spoofed addresses. In other words, Apple suggests that users concerned with security of their smartphone don't use SMS anymore. They just use iMessage. iMessage is, of course, available only on the iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and Apple computers. Apple has not indicated if it plans to fix the security hole. And that takes us to the end of another show. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize if there was somebody hanging on the line. No, I don't think there was. And that leaves us done for another week. If you didn't call in, well, it's your own fault, but we're going to give you another chance next week. Call in. It's the Chicago voting method. Call in early and often. you'll be able to find links to all the things we talked about on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And we will be back next week with a whole nother set. That's two solid hours of the longest running computer show in the known universe. You know that soundbites, and you know it is right here on the truly great and member supported Jazz 90.1. George is coming in with the best German music you'll hear in a long time. So stay tuned for some of that, and we're gone for another week.